suicide. With safe gun storage, we can give our loved ones a second chance at life. Learn more at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
The Sports Page starts in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, buddy!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is 5 o'clock, and the Sports Page is back, airing every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. here on 90.3 WRST-FM or 90.3 WRST.org. Fellas, we're finally here. Dylan Eckhart here, joined by Jacob Link, news director, Aiden Applegate, my sports assistant. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
Pretty good. I'm excited to be back on the air. This is, of course, pretty sure this is most of our first couple broadcasts of the year. I know you guys did the football games. I know you guys were on the call, of course, for Linfield, and you have been there for all three, you know, non-conference games. This is my first broadcast of the year, so it's just great to be back here up in the studio.
And for me, this is my first broadcast in general, so, I mean, I'm pretty excited for this.
Yeah, Aiden, you joined me on color for the opening game. That went pretty well, so now you're here first time on, like, a radio talk show kind of thing. Jacob's been here before. He knows the drill, but... Yeah, the rundown for today's show, we got the Titan Athletics segment coming up here in the first half. UWO Volleyball, they were in St. Paul, Minnesota this weekend and snagged a big conference win against Whitewater last Wednesday. WRST was there. Myself and Matthew Steffen were on the call for that, so we'll go through that a little bit. Titan football, you know, they look good up until this past Saturday where they were dominated, unfortunately, by the Huskies in their final non-conference home game at J.J. Carr Field. Jacob will have more on that. He's very closely affiliated with the team. And then... we'll jump into the Brewers and Packers. The Brewers, they clinched the NL Central with a walk-off win over the Phillies. They mounted a 7th and 8th inning comeback to beat the Diamondbacks 10-9 last night. And then the Packers, they look pretty good with Malik Willis at the helm. And guess what? We got a defense now, which is awesome. That's awesome. Jeff Hafley, he's definitely got this defense on the right track. And Green Bay, they continue to be blessed with a magic carousel of QBs. So that's all coming up here on the Sports Page. We'll take a quick break and be back for Titan Athletics here on 90.3 WRST-FM.
Yeah, buddy!
Are you a fan of Titan Athletics? Are you a sports fan in general? Well, you're in luck. The Sports Page airs every Monday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. where you can hear some of the hottest takes in the sports world. Wow. Dylan Eckhart and myself, Devin Mahalik, are the host of the Sports Page. Every Monday evening, we discuss Titan Athletics, the Badgers, Bucks, Packers, Brewers, and whatever is steaming in the sports world. Tune in every Monday on 90.3 WRST, the stream, or Radio FX in favorite the station to hear the Sports Page and more.
Do it! Just do it!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Sports Page is live here on 90.3 WRST-FM. That was an old little Sports Page intro. We'll have to take care of that one. Devin Mahalik, no longer here. He's off to bigger and better things here. But we'll jump into Titan Athletics. UWO volleyball team, they currently stand at 13-2 and atop the WEAC Conference. And this past Wednesday, the Titans, they ended up beating the Whitewater Warhawks in a close match that went 5 sets. Titans, they took sets 1, 4, and 5 with career games from Sammy Perlberg, Robin Kirsch, Olivia Brunig. We ended up catching up with Sammy Perlberg after the game and asked her about the preparations, you know, for this game as well as the history that they have with the Warhawks. Audio's coming up here. And we'll come back to that one. I don't know what's going on there. But we ended up catching up with Sammy Perlberg. Titans, they were perfect this weekend at the University of Northwestern Faith Radio Triangular. They swept both the University of Northwestern and St. Catherine University at the Erickson Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. Titans, their next action will be at the Williams Fieldhouse at UW-Platteville, where Pioneers, they're going to look to upset the top team in WEAC volleyball. I mean, guys, no shock that, you know, the volleyball team's off to the good start that they are.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of surprised by the top 25 poll from the American Volleyball Coaches Association. Now, the new poll comes out tomorrow. It comes out every Tuesday. But, you know, last week or the week previous to the week they beat Whitewater, they actually took down Hope and lost to Juniata. And I don't understand why the Titans are still ranked below Hope, even though they took down the... They're not the Flying Dutchmen. That's only the men's teams. I believe it's only the Flying Dutch is what they call the women's teams. But still, Hope sits at... Last week, they sat at 8-2. The Titans sat at 10-2 before they won, of course, three games over the weekend. I just don't really understand why the committee didn't put the Titans ahead of Hope when they beat them head-to-head. But, I mean, of course, rankings don't really matter. It's all about how you play for your conference play and then eventually in the postseason. But that was a great win against the Warhawks. I was there, got to see it. I was a bit concerned after the third set. Warhawks took that one 25-22, and I'm sitting there in the crowd. I'm going like, this is not looking good. Whitewater, they have all the momentum. Everybody on their bench was up clapping. Everybody on the Titan bench looked down. Heads were down. But talk about the response from the Titan volleyball team to come back, win the fourth set 25-23. It was so close. You could not tell who was going to win that fourth set. And then to come back in the fifth set and take that one 15-10. Honestly, that one was kind of dominated by the Titans. I feel like they knew as soon as they got to that fifth set that it wasn't even going to be close.
Yeah, no, it was an excellent game and, you know, something that UWO can really be proud of because, you know, the Warhawks have had their number for quite a while. It was really up until last fall that this rivalry started to reform, and the Titans looked, you know, excellent in this game, and it went back and forth. You didn't really know what was going to happen, and, you know, me and Matt were on the call for that game, and we were just, you know, in awe of what we were seeing. The level of competition, it was really good stuff.
And then, of course, too, it was community night against the Warhawks, so they were attempting to break the NCAA attendance record for a D3 women's volleyball game. Fortunately, the Titans came up short in that aspect. The attendance in that game was 2,043. Last year's community night was 2,725, which was tied for the third most in Division III history. Actually, the highest attendance record in Division III volleyball was set in 2013 between Hope and Calvin University at 3,051 fans. So still, I mean, you have over 2,000 fans at a volleyball game, D3 volleyball game. That's just shows you how much the sport has grown and how popular it is in this Oshkosh area. But, you know, kind of disappointed to see it go down. But I will say that the volleyball team had more fans at their game against Whitewater than the Titan football team did against Michigan Tech.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that. That's not what you want to see, definitely.
No.
Obviously, looking at the size of J.J. Keller Field. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if the temperature in Kauf Sports Center could have had something to do with it, because I remember seeing a lot of people start to kind of head out once it went to set four, and they had all the doors open in that place. There's no AC in Kauf, and it was hot. And I mentioned, like, I ended up wearing pants, so I'm sweating all over the place. And I don't know if that could have had something to do with the attendance, because I remember seeing people ending up, like, leaving toward the end of the game.
Yeah, well, I remember last year going to that community night, and that was so hot in there. Like, I was wearing, you know, short-sleeve T-shirt and shorts, and I was, like, burning up. I remember distinctly there was a woman who was wearing the clash suit, and I could tell that she was wearing the clash suit because she had to take it off and come back, and she was watching the game just drenched with sweat.
Oh, God.
And clash ended up being, you know, like, a few inches taller. But
yeah.
So obviously they had somebody new in the suit there, but it was just so warm in that arena that, you know, of course there's no AC, like you said, in Kauf, that you can just feel the sweat just dripping off of you. I can't even imagine what it'd be like to be on that court playing.
Yeah, the players were definitely fanning themselves off in between sets, so it was getting to them. But, and again, the Titans obviously able to come out on top. But yeah, now that you mentioned that, there was no Clash Titan there at that game. Nobody was doing that. But we do have the Sammy Proberg audio, the sports bumper kept playing. But we'll get the Proberg audio here. So we basically caught up with her after the game and asked her about the preparations for this game, as well, again, as the history that they have with the Warhawks.
It's great. We don't really think about the past. It's a new season, first conference game. So whatever happened in the past doesn't really matter to us. We come in with the right mindset and nothing can stop us. We prep the same for every single game, no matter who we're going to play. We really look into the individual players to see how they play and see how we can defend them, as well as how we can score points against them. As long as we have the strong mindset, we're good. We have the same mindset no matter who we're playing. Doesn't really matter.
So yeah, a career game for her too. I mean, I don't even know. I'd have to check the box score here on how many total attacks she had, but those first couple sets, Jacob, I don't know if you were there at all to watch those, but they just did not have an answer for her. And really, the first set looked like, you know, Oshkosh was going to just walk through in three, you know, and Whitewater didn't really have an answer until that second set. And obviously, they tied things up, went on, and the game got a little more interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing to watch Sammy Perlberg and to think that she's only a sophomore. I mean, she led the team in kills with 20 against the Warhawks. That was only one off from, you know, leading the entire match out of any team there. And at the same time, you know, looking at the box score again, excuse me, every single time the Titans led in their kill percentage, they ended up taking the set, which, you know, I guess makes sense. But you look at the first set, Titans had 18 kills compared to just 9 for Whitewater. Titans took that first set. In the second set, third set, and fourth set, well, second and third set, was the Whitewater had more kills easily in those two sets. And then the final two sets were dominated by the Titans. So, you know, whenever the Titans can get those kill numbers up, they seem to be able to roll over pretty much everybody.
Yeah, and Perlberg, I mean, 20 total kills, total attacks, 65. The next closest was Riley Kent with 29. So Perlberg doing her thing out there. But, I mean, this was an absolute team effort. Every girl on that court played her heart out in this game, and obviously they knew what it means. You know, this is Whitewater Warhawks. This is the biggest rivalry, really, when it comes to all sports in the WEAC Conference. So good stuff from our volleyball team. And now we'll get into Titan football. Titan football, they, you know, looking very, very good up until this last week. And Jacob, obviously, I don't have to tell that to you. But, yeah, they come in D2 Huskies. You know, we're thinking this is going to be a lot closer game, and it was the complete opposite of that. And 3 points I kind of want to go over here. I mean, the offensive line, obviously, they got chewed out for their performance. The run game was really non-existent for us, and no holes were opening up. And you go into the half, and your starting quarterback is at 11 rushing yards, and that's the highest you got. Something's got to change. And Warren, I mean, he had Cole Warren, the freshman starter, had no time to get rid of that ball and make plays.
Yeah, and, you know, let's give some credit to Michigan Tech. They really surprised me.
Their defense was
outstanding. I did not think that they were going to be this good. I mean, they started off the season. They're now 3-1. They've won the last three games. They started off their season at number 25, Bemidji State, ranked number 25 in D2, of course. They actually lost 19-13 in overtime. You know, maybe that was just a fluke. But then they go and they beat South Dakota the Mines in four overtimes. 52-50. Beat Hillsdale 21-6, and then, of course, they, you know, destroy us 44-7. But the last couple of years, Michigan Tech has, I mean, and historically never really been a football school, but with their new head coach that they just got this season, they look like they could potentially be in the top 25 of Division II, and some of those guys looked huge. I mean, you looked at some of the O-linemen versus our D-linemen, and it was like at least a head, at least a helmet between, you know, how tall they were compared to us, so it just goes to show you, you know, the level of D2 versus D3.
Right, and looking at our offensive line, I mean, the biggest guy that they have is Shiger on the outside there.
Sugar.
I know he's called Sugar on the team. But, yeah, like, I mean, he's the biggest guy you got. I mean, Andrew Vescova, very, you know, powerful, good center. You know, he, size-wise, had just nothing against those defensive linemen there for the Huskies. So, yeah, offensive line, you know, it's unfortunate, too, because those first two games, they were doing really good. Quentin Keene, when he got the first start against Wheaton, he had a lot of time to throw that ball and make plays, and he went downfield, you know, with Tetzlaff and John Matthew, big play Trey, all those guys. And then you've got, in the second game against Wheaton, same thing. They're still able to make those big plays when they need to, but the offense just had no push, and the Huskies were just prowling all over them.
I had a few friends who went to the game at the Michigan Tech, and a few of them left after the first quarter because it was already two touchdowns in, and the Titans had nothing going for them. And I was really surprised that they didn't utilize Quentin Keene much at all that game. And just, I was holding it down here at the radio station, and I was losing hope after the first half, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of all were, and even on the call, like me and Matt mentioned, like do they make a switch at quarterback? I know, like Cole Warren himself did not have that bad of a game. You know, I think he was in a tough position with that rush, and again, Lovelace, Tristan Taylor, none of those guys could really get anything going, and It was just complete domination in the trenches, and that's really at the end of the day where this game was won. Your quarterback, you know, he can be as good as he can, but he cannot, like, he can't make plays with 2 seconds. You know, he can't do anything with that time. So it was really just one in the trenches.
Yeah, Warren didn't have really any time to throw, but he still threw 2 interceptions, which, you know, you just got to, like, when you're getting pressured like that, it's hard to think quickly. But I think this was a very good game for him just to learn, like, what kind of competition that the Titans are going to be facing, because they're going to be facing Whitewater and La Crosse and Platteville, and they're not going to have a lot of time to throw anyway for those games. So I think it was just a big learning experience for him. I thought the Titans actually started the game very well. They went down the field, and to be honest with you, I can't believe that we missed that field goal.
Yeah.
Because that could have changed the game drastically. If we go down and score, that means they are going to have to come back and score again. Instead, they pretty much got us to punt the next drive. They scored, and then we're already down 7-0, and then they get the stupid onside kick, which don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, I mean, only imagine the reaction from coaching staff on the sideline and Peter Jennings. I mean, that just seems like it was just adding insult to injury. There was really no need for that. You know, the game was still within reach, but they decided to pull it out of their hat. And yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, we were up watching that from the press box, and we're just like, yeah, that's going to feed off some bad energy on the sidelines.
Yeah, and the crazy part with that is that their long snapper came over on the sideline. You could watch him come over and, like, start pumping up their kickoff team. So we were kind of like, what's going on? Why is their long snapper standing alongside the kickoff team?
Yeah.
And then they do a little onside kick, and we're like, okay, well, that was why the long snapper just completely gave it away to his kicking buddy. But, like, yeah, it was tough to watch. That play was tough to watch because nobody was expecting it.
Yeah, and the first drive looked very good. First drive looked fantastic. I mean, Trey Tetzlaff had most of those big catches to keep the drive alive on third down. A lot of first down conversions. You guys were moving the ball. And then the field goal, I can't remember, was it blocked or was it kind of just
blocked.
A low kick?
Yeah.
Yeah, it ended up being blocked. I knew it didn't obviously make it, but
ended up calling a timeout. What was interesting about that is that we went out there to kick the 40-yard field goal, and then we called timeout. And then I feel like that gave them more of a chance to set up and block. Because when you just got to run out there, you don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, set your gap and run.
Right.
You know? But when you call timeout, it's like doing a PAT. You know, you have plenty of time to set up your defense and rush however you want to.
Yeah. So a very good first drive. And then, again, the missed field goal. And then you guys were just forced to punt and then punt again and then punt again. And then, yeah, from there on out, the game was kind of out of reach. And it's just a shame because, you know, coming into this game, the Titans, there was so much momentum. I mean, you've got two basically last-second victories. The win against Wheaton was a 4-minute drive. You punch it down. You score with a minute left. Lovelace punches it in. And then an interception by Ben Wellhafer to end the game, basically. Wheaton takes a deep shot downfield, and that's how that ends. And then Linfield, if that wasn't thrilling enough, the Linfield finish, which went into overtime, and then you go down, you score with Lovelace again, and then Kyle Dietzen picks it off in the end zone, and that's how that ends. So to go from, for Titan fans to go from that, those last 2 weeks, to what we saw Saturday, just, I mean, I can tell you there was no life. There was no life in J.J. Carfield.
And I don't know about you guys, but the fourth quarter of the Michigan Tech game, that just got super ugly for, like, what seems to be no reason. We had, what, 2 players, 1 on Titans and 1 on Michigan Tech, get thrown out of the game just like that?
Yeah. Yeah, and Jacob, how close were you to that?
I was pretty close. So whenever I'm standing on the sideline, I kind of, you know, make sure that I'm not in the way of anybody running towards me.
Right.
So whenever I see a guy getting pushed towards me, you know, I'm running the other direction because I don't need to get taken out. But so I was about 10 yards away when Michigan Tech player kind of, well, I guess one of our guys was kind of going at it with Michigan Tech guy. They both end up in the bench area. And then for whatever reason, the Michigan Tech guy just kind of shoves our team photographer to the ground. She hits her head. She's bleeding. And Curtis Jaskalki, one of the defensive linemen.
One of the best defensive linemen playing this year.
They actually call him Mr. Wyack because he's been named to the Wyack Defensive Team of the Week the last couple weeks. But anyways, Curtis had his helmet off on the sideline, and he was getting animated. Everybody's trying to hold him back, but he's a big, strong dude. So he just pushed everybody aside and got in there, started, like, you know, shoving the other guy and flags go flying and he gets kicked out of the game. But honestly, you can't be too mad at that because you're just trying to defend your own team.
Yeah.
And when you go after a team photographer, that is classless.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be going after somebody who's not even a part of the team.
Yeah.
On the sideline.
Yeah. We didn't see, we saw, it was Tristan Taylor going at it with, I believe, a defensive back. I think Taylor kind of finished the block out of bounds. And I initially thought that's who got ejected. So I saw that, and then we're still kind of trying to focus on what's going on in the field, and then I see more flags being thrown up on the Oshkosh sideline. I'm like, oh, boy, they probably just ejected Taylor. But I didn't find out till we met up with you after the game, and obviously this would have been off air, but that had happened, that your team photographer had gotten thrown down. And it's like, why even waste the energy? You're up 44-7 at that point. Why even waste the energy? And I know Curtis got ejected, and he probably won't be playing. Will he play against Whitewater? What is the rule on that? If he gets ejected,
that is going to be handed down by the WIAC.
Okay,
they need to tell him what his punishment is.
Yeah,
It's going to be different because it's not a conference game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know if there really is a punishment for that.
Okay,
I'm assuming he's going to have to sit out like at least a half.
Yeah, I hope it's not a full game because at the end of the day, good on him for doing that. I think that shows a lot about his character, shows a lot about his class because. It's one thing if it's still bad, but it's one thing if that guy goes after a player and just throws a player on the sideline,
yeah.
You know, on the ground. I mean, we saw that with I think it was the Bears and Texans, that defensive back, he got up and was getting pushed, and then he just punched that Bears, the guy, he wasn't even on the sideline, or he was on the sideline, wasn't even in the play. So it's one thing to do that, but for it to be, like, you know, a photographer who's not in pads, clearly, like, not playing at all, for that to happen is just absolutely ridiculous, and especially up that much.
Same as with the targeting call, too. I don't know why Michigan Tech, why their guys are going after our heads at the end of that game. I mean, you're up 44-0 at that point because we hadn't even scored yet. And, you know, suddenly these players are just diving at heads, trying to spear people. If you get hit in the head this day and age, you know it's going to be targeting. So why would you even try to fly in there and hit somebody like that?
Maybe they also think, like, we're up that much, you know, why even bother? Like, it's not really going to affect us, you know, in the long run. But also, I kind of posed this. I didn't pose this question. Kind of made this assumption, and maybe you can answer for me for this, Jacob. But do you think that they're a D2 team coming in on the road to a D3 school? Do you think that has anything to do with their, I guess, you know, intensity going into that game?
I feel like they knew or they thought that they were just going to go in there and kill us, basically. I mean, they kind of did if you look at the score, 44-7.
Right. Yeah.
But they didn't even bring any of their sideline technology equipment. That's what I heard. So they didn't even need any of their extra sideline technology iPads.
And half the roster didn't even make the trip.
Yeah. So they felt like they could bring pretty much nobody down there and still steamroll us. They didn't even warm up. I mean, they spent like 30 minutes on the field warming up.
They weren't even out there for the national anthem.
No, yeah, they didn't even go out there for the national anthem.
Yeah,
I mean, our guys are out there 2 hours before the game, and those guys showed up 45 minutes before the game and still steamrolls.
Yeah, so. It was super frustrating to watch, but that's a game that obviously they got to put behind them. They can't dwell on that, and I know they won't dwell on that. Coming in, I don't know if the message was it's a D2 school, like, let's forget about it. I would assume that is probably going to be the message, but you go in, you got a bye week. We'll spend the last 7 minutes here talking about this Whitewater game. So the Titan football team, they are going into a bye week this week. I believe the entire conference, with the exception of River Falls, River Falls is the only one who plays this week. The rest are on bye. So with that, you got the Titans have time to rest up after this game. Forget about it. Move on to conference play. Whitewater's got the same thing. They have that bye week. They have that extra time. And they just lost to
Mary Hardin Baylor,
which
they were unranked too.
Exactly.
Which was a big surprise, especially to lose at home like that. They lost 35-17. So it really wasn't even that close to the game.
No, and at home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know they're going to be coming back to Perkins Stadium with a vengeance. And you know how much they hate us. You know how much they hate the Titans. That, I think, is going to be on full display, and I'm hoping this Titan team can be ready for that. And I think they will. I hope it'll be a closer game than what we saw last year. And that was another thing I saw, or said. This Michigan Tech game, like, made that game look, like, more fun to call. Like, it was a brutal game to call on Saturday for that reason. And I never thought I'd say that after the Whitewater game last year. But last time this team played in Perkins Stadium, the defense played pretty exceptional. it was really just we had no offensive push. And, I mean, that was still with Kobe Berghammer under center, you know. So it's going to be – that's going to be the big question mark, as it really has been all year, is, you know, that quarterback situation. But now going into this week, what does our O-line look like? Because I believe – was it JoJo Nathaniel that got hurt at the end of the game?
Yeah, looked like he had like some sort of ankle.
Rolled ankle or something like
issue,
that.
Issue, excuse me, but I think he'll be good to go in 2 weeks. It didn't look necessarily that bad.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know what it is, but he was still able to move on his own power and stuff, so I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
Right. So you still have that starting offensive line, which, again, we know what happened against the Huskies. Are they going to be able to take care of that Whitewater front? Which, you know, we'll see after this. I mean, I'm hoping they can go in there and, you know, at least hang with them. Like, after this Husky game, like, I don't know what the expectations are.
Well, I feel like this Husky game is just a great representation of, like, what's to come. Like, last year, the game against Whitewater was 21-37. It was looking really bad after the first half, but Titans were able to pull out at least 3 touchdowns. But, I mean, this is a vengeance game. Like, that, they got that under their belt. And if you look at the Titan volleyball game, that game was also a vengeance game.
Right.
So that energy alone could help the Titans succeed, as long as the offensive line gives the quarterback some time, though.
Right, but you're forgetting that Perkins Stadium is a tough place to play in.
That is also true.
Yes, and that crowd, that atmosphere is...
And their stupid cannon they shoot off every time they score. Yeah. It's like the loudest thing I've ever heard in my life. Standing there, hearing this cannon just shoot off.
Yeah. We've been there once to call... Or yeah, it would have been the last away game that they had at Perkins Stadium. And yeah, it's a tough place to play. I will give credit. The stadium's super nice. Press box is super nice. But again, we're focused on this game action. So it's a tough place to play in. The Whitewater fans, they're tailgating like... I don't know, like a D1 level school. There's the atmosphere there is incredible, and the Warhawks feed off of that. So it is a tough place to play in, and again, I hope the Titans are ready for a Whitewater team that they are going to be mad after that Baylor loss, especially at home to an unranked team. Whitewater's coming in probably with the same attitude Michigan Tech was coming in against us. Like, we should steamroll these guys, and they go out there and they get their butts handed to them.
Yeah, it's going to come down to the defense of the Titans. Of course, it's going to be the offensive line, because we're going to have to be able to score points to be able to keep up with Whitewater, because they have historically a very good offense. But on the defensive side, we got burned too much on one-on-ones deep. It was like they just run a go route every single time, and we just got beat by at least 20 yards. I mean, Michigan Tech dropped at least 2 other potential touchdown passes. So we need to clean up our secondary and our offensive line if we want to have any sort of shot to beat the Warhawks down there.
Right, and that was my last point exactly, Jacob, is the one-on-one matchups were absolutely lost, and we never could get those opportunities on the offensive side. But defensively, I know Dre Valentine was out there. He's a freshman cornerback, young. You know, he's gaining all the experience he can. Has had a great year up until this point, but Alex Fries and that Michigan Tech offense, they saw that. They saw that, and they put their best receiver on him, and they attacked that. And it ended up hurting the Titans because those one-on-one matchups were lost. So, yeah, the defense had no answer for the Husky run, and those one-on-one matchups were lost, and there's not really much else that can really be said. There's not much else good that can be said from, you know, that Saturday game.
The punting was pretty good, I will say.
Wally Ratliff did his thing.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
He continues to pin him deep. So, yeah, so that'll conclude Titan Athletics, and hopefully this is the football schedule coming up. Hopefully that they can, you know, turn things around here coming up into conference. So they got this bye week, and then they go into next weekend at UW-Whitewater. Then October 12th and 19th, they're back home at UW-Lacrosse. That'll be another tough game. Lacrosse, it says they're ranked number 3 right now.
Yeah, they actually lost to Grand Valley State, the second-ranked Division II team in the nation. They lost only 20-13 on the road.
And they're in that Husky division, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the GLIAC, we were talking to some Husky fans that were parked next to us out there at J.J. Keller Field. The GLIAC is a tough conference, very tough conference. So they'll face Lacrosse that October 12th. And then
it's a pub crawl.
Pub crawl, right?
For the pub crawl game.
Yeah, that'll be a good one for the pub crawl game. And then Platteville is the following weekend for homecoming. Platteville always gives us a tough run. That should be a good game. Then they're at Stevens Point then at Eau Claire to start off November, then Senior Day is their last home game against UW-Stout, and then they'll close things on the road against River Falls, and Oshkosh and River Falls is always fun matchups. Always fun matchups. So that'll include the Titan Athletics. Coming up next, the Brewers are getting our... Are the Brewers... Here's a question. Are the Brewers getting our hopes up just to crush us again? Hopefully not, but we'll answer that. Do the Packers end the Vikings' stellar start to the season this weekend at Lambeau? We'll answer that and more here on the Sports Page.
Hey, Dad. Your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad. Your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Titan Sports Play here.
Takes a snap. He's going to fake the throw, and he's going to run it. He's going to the 30, now to the 20, to the 10. 5, touchdown, Cody Berghammer.
That was a really nice play design by UWO. From the tip-off, kickoff, and first pitch to the last whistle and final out.
Plowman spins out of it. Finds Steckler, 1 second, puts up a three. Yes!
Oh, he got
what
it!
What a way to end the half. 51-40, Steckler was wide open on the right side.
Your home for Titan Athletics is the radio station of the Titans, 90.3 WRST-FM and WRST.org.
Off the mark, Oshkosh wins. WIAC champions of 2022. UW Oshkosh holds on in a thriller.
Right into the Brewers segment here. Brewers, they clinched the NL Central with a walk-off against the Phillies after a weekend they, you know, really didn't look too good against the Diamondbacks, but they were able to mount a 7th and 8th inning comeback here on Sunday night to win 10-9. So, fellas, are the Brewers, they seem to do this all the time. They win the NL Central with ease, and then come playoff time, we can never get the deal done. Do we see that happening again, or... I mean, they look like they've got things going their way, and they've really got the momentum on their side. But I just, it's the same old song and dance every year, I feel like.
Yeah, as a Brewers fan, I will never say that the Brewers are good enough to win the World Series until they do. Because just like the Bucks, for a long time, the Bucks, it's like you're not going to say that they have a real shot at winning the championship because they're still the Bucks, or they're still the Brewers. Like, they're still going to find a way to screw things up and lose. That's just who they are. Like, in this day and age, it's really tough to beat teams like Philadelphia and the Dodgers just because of what their payroll is and just because they're the Dodgers. You know what I mean? They're going to be able to make it to the World Series. It's either going to be Philadelphia or Los Angeles, unless, you know, unless the Brewers can pull some sort of magical upset. I mean, no team is really going to come close to that, you know, 1982 Brewers team that's still came up short to the Cardinals.
Yeah, and this is a Brewer team that's, you know, still banged up too. But, you know, they go into these next couple series, and I think they got a good spot to, they're in a good spot to at least build momentum, get some more wins before going into the playoffs. And they have the day off today, but then they go three games on the road against Pittsburgh, who is eliminated from playoff contention. So they're really just playing to kind of upset us at this point. And then they'll come back this weekend at home, their last regular season series, last series at home as well against the New York Mets. And I'd have to look at the standings, but are the Mets still in playoff contention in the National League?
Yeah, they still have the final wild card spot in the NL, I believe. I believe they have a 2-game lead on the Braves.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that should be a very good series. I can foresee them going into Pittsburgh and taking care of that one. I think the Pirates could get one, but I think that we go into Pittsburgh, we take care of that, win 2-1, and then the Mets series, Mets are still playing for a playoff spot. Granted, we've clinched ours, but I don't think we lift our foot off the gas. At least I'm hoping, you know.
Well, one thing that I recognize is that I got a few guys on my floor who are really big Brewers fans. They're like diehard Brewers fans. And, I mean, he's loyal. He's really loyal to the Brewers. But, I mean, I keep telling him, I'm like, you know, it's not going to happen. They're not going to get – I mean, they might tickle us with a little bit of the championship, but they're not going to go that much farther. And, personally, that's why I kind of just gave up on the Brewers entirely.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm in that spot to completely give up on them or not, because, I mean, I'll always be a Brewers fan. I know there was talk of them moving out of Milwaukee. Luckily, that's not happening, but I think it was like, I don't know, I think they were going to move to, like, Salt Lake City or something like that.
Really?
Is what I heard, yeah. And, like, I might still be a Brewers fan. Like, the Salt Lake City Brewers just sounds really weird, but I might still be a Brewers fan, you know, even though they're out of Milwaukee and even though they're out of, you know, my home state, but... Yeah, I mean, I'll never lose faith. I'll never give up on the Brewers, but they definitely make it hard to get excited for the playoffs, I feel like.
That's just being a Wisconsin sports fan, though. It's like every season you go into it and you're like, my gosh, this team's good. We could win the championship. We could go to the Super Bowl, the Packers. They have a good enough team. We could actually contend for a Super Bowl.
Right.
And then they go to the playoffs and they lose to the 49ers, most likely, like they do every single year.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, that was just a waste. And you feel so like angry and mad. You're like, I don't even want to be a Packers fan anymore. And then you go into baseball season, you're like, oh, the Brewers, they actually have a real shot here at, you know, winning the NL Central, going to the playoffs. And then they go to the playoffs, and then they lose to somebody like the Diamondbacks or, you know, any other. I think I saw a stat where every single team the Brewers have lost to in the playoffs has gone on to win the World Series, or at least make it to the World Series.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So pretty much any team we lose is going to win the World Series.
So then if we get that first series, like, are the hopes, is it just flipped around? Like, is it like, all right, now this is our year? Because the last time I have felt any sort of happiness with the playoffs and the Brewers was 2018. That would have been 6 years ago against the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are always the ones to spoil the party, I feel like. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping for a good competitive playoff stand. And I would imagine that we're third, right, in the NL?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So probably won't be, you know, I guess I'd have to look at how the bracket lines up. But playoff games at Miller Park, sorry, AmFam Field, my bad. It's always going to be Miller Park to me, are definitely a good time. I mean, Brewer games in general are just a fun time. But to have it around that playoff time, you move into the months of late September, October, playoff baseball. I mean, it's probably the second best thing behind football at that time, I'd say.
Yeah, I'm confident the Brewers will at least win the wild card series that they're most likely going to play in, because let's be honest, I don't think they're going to be able to catch the Phillies or the Dodgers for that one or two spot. But I'm confident they're going to be able to beat somebody, you know, like the Mets. The Mets aren't really that great of a team. Sure, they're in the playoffs, but like you look at them and you're like, they're not really that great of a team. The Diamondbacks, you know, they're one of those teams where at the beginning of the season they did not look very good. And now, of course, they're turning things on just like they did last year. So the Diamondbacks, you know, maybe a little bit cause for concern there, but I'm not too worried about that. But and then you got the Padres, which I don't believe we would have to face the Padres because they've got such a big lead on the wild card,
right,
the first wild card spot. But I feel like we can easily take the first series, but moving to that second series, the NLDS, that's going to be the real challenge, having to most likely either play the Dodgers or the Phillies.
Yeah, and that's usually the kryptonite. And, you know, the last few playoff stands, it hasn't been that. It's usually a first-round exit. But the closest we've got, the best we've got, and I feel like this team's in a very good spot to where they know they're capable of great things. So I'm just hoping for the best. Again, an NLDS appearance is, like, all I'm praying for right now at this point. But, you know,
Well, especially when, I mean, we were projected to finish fifth most polls.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I saw that at the beginning of the season, and they're picking us below, like, the Pirates or the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
But
so, yeah, the Brewers, again, they got the day off today. They'll get ready for their travel day with Pittsburgh. They'll go there for three games, and then they've got the Mets to close out the regular season. So that'll conclude Brewers talk. We'll move into Packers talk. And, fellas, Packers are 2-1, looking pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at people like Xavier McKinney getting an interception just about every game against the Eagles, the Colts, and now the Titans, and opportunities like that just like boost the Packers' energy by 10.
Yeah, yeah. Packers looking real good. We got bang on the drum playing. We're gonna play this every day that the Packers win. And the way they've been playing now, we might be playing this quite a bit. But yeah, the Packers, Jeff Hafley's got that defense turned around. I mean, we have a defense now, which is, we've been preaching forever. I mean, even going back to the Aaron Rodgers days, Aaron Rodgers, as great as he was, that was a big kryptonite on why the Packers couldn't close the deal, was the lack of defense. And I'm so happy that we're able to turn things around. We are one of the most fortunate sports organizations, I feel like, because we got the defense turned around, we're blessed with quarterbacks, and, you know, things are looking very good. And Hafley, I think, has done a fantastic job to start this season. And Xavier McKinney, my goodness, I might get his jersey pretty soon, because he's got a pick every game and is proving to be all the worth.
Yeah, I saw a stat during that Titans game, Tennessee Titans, of course, not UW Oshkosh Titans, but that I saw a stat that the Packers have had 9 starting quarterbacks since 1990, which is the least amount of quarterbacks to start a game in the NFL
only
since 1990.
Below New England,
yeah,
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, which is just crazy. And I can't believe that Malik Willis is playing better than Will Levis. I mean, like, the Titans traded away Malik Willis. Obviously, they thought he was not a piece to their puzzle. He goes to Green Bay and then, you know, looked really good. Probably the best game he's played ever in a regular season NFL game.
And he was a late addition in the offseason, I believe.
Like, yeah.
It was not too long ago that he was signed to that roster.
And not only that, but he also he already has 2 rushing touchdowns already, one against the Colts and one against the Titans already.
Yeah. I mean, you ever seen those memes where it's like, this is just an example, but I want Lamar Jackson, but we have Lamar Jackson at home. Like, that's kind of what I look at Malik Willis as. But, I mean, he's absolutely succeeding, absolutely great, and he's got a lot of Packers fans asking, can we keep him out there for a little bit, even though we're paying Jordan Love all this money? But, obviously, as soon as Jordan Love's healthy, we need to put him back out on that field because, you know, he needs to prove still that he is worth that $55 million guaranteed, and I think he'll do that. But yeah, the news that I've heard about Love is that he's getting closer to being ready to play, and the Packers host the Vikings this weekend, which is their toughest test. I mean, say what you want about Tennessee and Indianapolis and how close the Colts game was, but the Vikings are the toughest test the Packers have in this entire schedule. I know that Philly game was close, but this is going to be a true test to how good this team can be, and right now this is for the NFC North.
Yeah, the last couple games for the Packers have all been about the offensive game because the defense has looked superb through the first 3 games. I mean, the last 2 games, it's been a little scary because our defense has been so good, but then our offense, you know, kind of gets complacent. After halftime, they have not looked like they can score really at all. So that's going to be a factor, I feel like, going into the Vikings. Are we home or away from
home? It's at Lambeau.
Okay. Luckily, we're at home, because if we had to go there,
yeah,
and listen to those stupid Vikings fans with their horn that they blow every time there's a first down.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's going to come down to our offensive game plan. I am not sure we'll be able to run the ball as much as we did against, you know, Indianapolis. So it's hopefully Malik can go out there and open up the passing game, because if we open up the passing game, then the run is going to make it so much easier to hit those holes.
Well, what is Jordan Love's status? Because if he's ready to go, I would assume he'd play. They were questioning that he might be able to play against Tennessee. So I don't know.
He practiced a few days, I believe,
yeah,
for Tennessee week. But, like, do you really want to throw him in there and potentially have him get, you know, more injured?
Yeah. Right, and the Packers, I guess, will look at that and see how important this Minnesota game is, which it is a very important one. But I think at this point, the Packers have proved that no matter who they put out there at quarterback, whether it's Love or Malik, I don't think Packers fans are going to complain. Like, if Packers fans see number 2 out there again under center, I know me personally, I'm not complaining. Like, I at this point want to see that because Malik has played so good. He's 2-0 as a starter, and the Vikings are 3-0, which is mind-boggling to me. I did not really think they were going to be this good to start the year, but I think that's a matchup that I definitely want to see.
I think that Jaden Reed has been finding a lot of openings. I mean, at least the highlights from the last game, Jaden Reed got a lot of openings, able to go up to the first down a few times.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, all those guys, all those young receivers are proving that they're worth. And I think that was a huge thing for the Packers was to have that young carousel receivers and tight ends. All of our tight ends were pretty much rookies as well. To have those young guys, you know, kind of just be thrown to the wolves like that in a season last year that was very up and down, and now they come into this season and they're more established. They know what their worth is, and I've just been so impressed to, yeah, they were playing under Jordan Love that entire season, but how quick this team has been able to just, you know, reset the game plan around a quarterback like Malik, who is obviously very different than Jordan Love. Jordan Love is, you know, as good as a year as he had to close out. Malik is obviously way more mobile, is way more of a dual threat than Jordan Love is. And the fact that Matt LaFleur and this team has been able to basically restart the game plan around a player of that caliber, a player of that style, is nothing short of impressive at all.
Yeah, I was a bit worried whenever Malik would release the ball in the air, because it's just like you don't know what's going to happen. Whenever a quarterback goes out there, you're just kind of like, okay, please don't throw a pick. Please don't throw a pick. When I saw him toss some of those balls up in the air, like, there were some spectacular catches made, especially by Christian Watson. I mean, he only had 2 receptions, but totaled 67 yards on the day. So I couldn't tell if Malik was, if that's just who he is, if he's just that type of precision passer, or if he's just throwing up some prayers and just hoping that the Packers can, you know, come down with the ball. But anyways, I just think that it was, you know, just a great performance by, a much better performance by Malik. A great performance for him, and hopefully he can continue this into the next week if we don't have Jordan Love.
Yeah, and I mean, Christian Watson, that was kind of a welcome back game for him, because he wasn't, you know, dare I say, as relevant in these first, you know, few games, these first 2 games beforehand, but had some very big plays to start the game, you know, and only the 2 receptions, but they went for big yards. Like you said, Jacob, 67 yards, and yeah, Malik Willis, I mean, led the game in both passing and rushing yards, and just proving why he's that much of a dual threat. Emmanuel Wilson looked great running the ball, too. They kind of held Josh Jacobs at bay, but Emmanuel Wilson stepped in there and delivered some real big runs, and he was another rookie that was playing last season and kind of, you know, trying to establish himself in that run game, and with A.J. Dillon being out, he's got the year to do it.
I mean, for Malik Willis, if he does end up playing against the Vikings, I'll be very interested to see, like, how he does under that type of pressure, because their defense is really, really good. And so, I mean, yes, I would like Jordan Love to come back, but, I mean, I'm kind of excited to see how he does.
Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. And, you know, with Malik being out there instead of Love, again, no Packer fan right now, the way he's playing, is going to be complaining about that. Nobody's going to be like, why didn't they put Jordan Love out there? Unless, you know, the game just goes completely, you know, backwards and sideways, which I hopefully it will not, because as good as the Vikings' defense is, our defense is pretty dang good too. And again, Jeff Hafley has that defense turned around, and Xavier McKinney's probably the best safety in the league right now. And that was, I just remember that being a huge pickup. And I've been looking on Instagram, there's comments from Giant fans like, as a Giants fan, we want Xavier back. Like, we need him back, because it's not looking too good in New York there. But they ended up getting their first win against Cleveland, so I guess, you know, things are maybe turning for them. But still focusing on the Packers, this is a huge game against the Vikings, and we'll kind of spend the last 10 minutes here talking about that game and kind of breaking that down. Everybody who ever talked crap about Sam Darnold owes him an apology, I feel like, because Sam Darnold is looking pretty dang good, and he's got this Vikings team, you know, full ship ahead, full steam ahead. They're 3-0 leading the NFC North, and I believe it's the Vikings, Kansas City, and I believe there's one other team that's 3-0. I'm trying to think off the top of the dome here. But there's not many teams left that are undefeated.
Not.
And the Vikings and the Chiefs are one of those teams, or both of those teams. But yeah, I think that this is a huge opportunity for the Packers to prove that, you know, it's not a fluke right now. Like, what we're seeing is, you know, who they are. And I know Matt LaFleur, who gives some of the best post-game speeches. I don't know if you see the Instagram reels there for the Packers, but he really has this team figured out. They know what their identity is, which is a complete opposite parallel to last season. This time last season, me and Devin would come on here and we're like, what is this team's identity? We have nothing. There's nothing to offer right now. Jordan Love is not established. He's got no time to throw the ball. Receivers are dropping passes. There's just no offensive production at all. And, I mean, and then the defense, would go up against Carolina, one of the worst teams, still one of the worst teams, and make it close, give up 30, 40 points. And that's not happening anymore. So the defense has looked absolutely solid. No matter who we have in at quarterback, it really doesn't matter at this point because, again, we are so freaking spoiled and blessed with quarterbacks. And, yeah, this is going to be an exciting game. I got some Vikings friends, too, so I know it's tough, but it will be a fun game, and I know the atmosphere at Lambeau is going to be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think what LaFleur has done really well is with the belief of this team, because the beginning of last season, they looked awful. We looked like just as bad as the Bears or, you know, Carolina at some points, but he completely turned things around, especially after that bye week last year. And he just instilled this belief in the team that they're just as good as any other team in the league. And that continued all the way into the postseason. I mean, pretty much a couple field goals away from taking down the 49ers in the playoffs. And I feel like that squad making it that far in the playoffs to the divisional round, that just instilled the belief in the team to come back this year and continue pretty much rolling where they left off. I mean, besides, you know, that loss against Philadelphia, which was pretty close.
Yeah.
And of course it was abroad, so the Titans, or sorry, not the Titans.
The Packers.
Packers. So used to talking about UWO football,
right,
here,
right.
But the Packers do not play well in international games. I mean, they've only had two, but still. But I believe that the belief in the team that LaFleur has instilled, that this team now has endless possibilities. They have an endless, you know, floor and what they could do.
Oh, yeah. I don't think their ceiling is existent right now. I think that they can go as high as they want to. They're in a really good spot, and I don't know who to give the edge to, as big of a Packers fan as I am, obviously, and I'm not, you know, trying to sound like a homer on the air, which I probably have been the last 10 minutes, but, I mean, them hosting the Vikings at home is huge. I mean, I think if this was at Bank of America Stadium, the odds that the Vikings would win would probably be way more increased, but I think with this being at Lambeau and this rivalry being as good of a rivalry as it is, I mean, This is our rivalry. You know, as much nostalgia and history that there is with the Packers and the Bears, the Packers and the Vikings is the NFC North rivalry. And now even with the Lions getting better too, and, you know, us being able to beat the Lions, I think Thanksgiving last year we ended up beating them. Like, those are the rivalries, you know. And the Bears, obviously, you know, they still got to get it figured out. Caleb Williams, you know, again, a tough spot to come into. He's got all these weapons, but the offensive line never got any better. And that's kind of what we thought would be the case. We thought they beefed up their O-line coming in, and that has not been the case at all. So Chicago, obviously, in a tough stand right now, and I think the entire division has just become very, very interesting, especially with the success we're seeing from Minnesota. I think a lot of people came into the season and didn't really know what was going to happen with us. Like, Jordan Love's second year, is he going to be worth this $55 million? But, and then also Chicago with Caleb Williams coming in, he's a top draft pick of 2024, and so far not much production there right now. And then the Lions being the defending champs and being one game away from the Super Bowl, and you know they have a history of just being a poverty franchise. Nobody really expected Minnesota. I think a lot of people wrote Minnesota off, and I think that might have been heard by the Vikings, and they have, Kevin O'Connell and this Vikings team have really come alive, and it is going to be an interesting game at Lambeau Field. Noon kickoff, so that's absolute prime time, I feel like, for Packer and Vikings games. But yeah, I've got nothing else more to say with that other than I'm just super excited for that game, and you know, that is for the division at this point, so.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, we do have to just take a step back and realize that Sam Darnold is still Sam Darnold. I mean, this is a guy that over his career has thrown 58 interceptions to 71 touchdown passes. I feel like he's going to come to earth eventually. If you just look at his career numbers, he really wasn't that great with the Jets. And then with Carolina, obviously, Carolina stunk. And then he was with San Francisco, I believe, last year. He only played in a couple games. But he, you know, he's going to come back down to earth, I feel like. And he's actually kind of banged up coming off that game against the Texans. He actually had an MRI today looking at a potential knee injury.
Oh, really?
They saw that it was just a bruise, but he took a bad hit, apparently, at the end of the Texan game. So, you know, maybe if we get some more pressure on him, maybe bang him up a little bit more. He's going to get lazy with his throws, I feel like, eventually. And with the way our secondary has been playing, I feel like we'll be able to pick off at least one or two balls.
Yeah, he's on my fantasy team, too, which is kind of unfortunate as well. So my fantasy team's in shambles right now. I had CMC, my first pick, on IR right away.
Oh, I did, too.
Oh, yeah,
same thing.
Terrible. So, but going back to Sam Darnold, the Vikings undoubtedly are a better team than the Jets or the Panthers. And I think organization-wise, they're probably better. The Jets, though, they might, I mean, A-Rod's coming back to life. That was a commanding win against the Patriots, who, again, the Patriots still trying to find themselves with Gerard Mayo, you know, being a new head coach. But I think Sam Darnold is in the best position he's been in his career, and I think it's showing. I mean, he's got 657 yards, averaging 8.4 per pass, 8 touchdowns on the year already through 3 games. So that's pretty good stuff for Sam Darnold, you know, considering his previous career. You know, only 2 interceptions. And I think the Packers defensively do have the best chance of, like you said, Jacob, kind of bringing him down to earth. And I hope that is what happens on Sunday. But also, another big story, Aaron Jones. He returns to Lambeau Field for the first time not dressed in the green and gold. And I don't know what the... It'll be interesting to see what the housewarming, the welcoming is for him. Because I remember it was kind of... It kind of did leave a bad taste in Packers fans' mouths, kind of myself included. You know, he was asking for money. He did end up taking a pay decrease to stay with the Packers last season. But then I think he was kind of like, all right, enough is enough. I want to get paid, because he did a lot. He did a lot for our offense, and like, I will forever be grateful. But I know that it left a bad taste in Packers' mouth that he had to go to the Vikings. He had to go to the Vikings of all teams. You know, I don't know what would have been worse. Like, I know Detroit would not have been as bad, but like, do you think him going to Chicago would have been still as bad as going to the Vikings?
No.
Because again, I think the Vikings Packers is, again, the Vikings, I think, are our biggest competitive rival right now. So I think that's what left a lot of, there was a lot of sourness in the mouths of Packer fans for that one.
Aaron Jones, he was with the Green Bay Packers for what, 7 seasons or something like that?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, just like you were saying before, though, it's, you know, it would have, sure, it would have stung if he would have went to the Bears, but the Bears are just so far below anybody else
right.
in the division. You know, our real biggest tests, as you said before, are with Detroit and with Minnesota. Detroit, you know, I don't know, Dan Campbell's, you know, decision-making, I feel like is going to lose them more games than it's going to win them this year. I don't see them making it back to the NFC championship game.
Oh, really?
They did last year. No, sure, they do have a talented team, but when you have a coach who's trying to do fake punts on your own, like, 12-yard line when you're, like, 4th and 10, like, you know, eventually it's going to bite you in the butt, and you're going to lose a couple games that way.
Yeah, and some of the questions Dan Campbell's made are obviously, you know, very, like, why would you do that? But Dan Campbell... Like, that is his team. You can't deny how good of a coach he is, how good he is to turn that franchise around. I mean, he comes in there, they don't do well in his first year, but then the next year, they end up at the NFC Championship game, and they're 1 game away from going to the Super Bowl. And, like, this is the same team that went 0-16 in 2008, which seems like a long time ago, but really isn't. So you can't deny, you know, Dan Campbell being able to turn that team around and really make the NFC North interesting, because for a while, that was a division that was dominated by us and the Vikings.
Yeah, and props to him for being able to turn that franchise around, but, you know, just like I said, there's just some situational football things that make me kind of question, like, you know, will this team be able to win the big games? Now, the Vikings, they have been a complete shock to me. I did not expect them to be 3-0 so far, especially beating the 49ers. But, yeah, it's going to be a big test for the Packers next Sunday.
Big test for the Packers. That will conclude Episode 1 of the Sports Page. Again, we are on the air every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. on 90.3 WRST-FM. We will return you to your regularly scheduled programming here.